Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, it's time to make time for Toski and talk a little Masters with Bob Toski. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad to be along. It is indeed that time. It is time for Toski. Yes, the legendary instructor, leading money winner on PGA Tour. The resume goes on and on and on. Veteran, just guy has done everything in his life, still gives back to the game. It will be 100 years old in September and continues to play golf. So what the heck? So let's welcome the illustrious one, the always contributing Bob Toski back to the show. Bob, thanks for making time as always.
Thank you, Keith. It's always a pleasure for me to be with you.
Well,
and talk about golf.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. I want to talk about Masters that's coming up just a few weeks away, and we got our paperwork, so we're super excited. We'll be back in Augusta for that beautiful tournament that is the Masters. So looking forward to that. And you got a chance to play that course back in your professional days, and I want to talk about that experience as we kick off this show this week.
Well, I had a great first day experience. I need to talk to you about. I played with the great. They paired me with the great Sam Snead,
a buddy of yours, a guy who names you the Mighty Mouse, and certainly a guy who took you under his wing, and he could actually do that because I think Sam could probably, for the country boy that he was, probably could pick you up with one arm and put you under his wing and carry you down the course.
He's like Trevino. He said, if I didn't have an Adam's apple, I wouldn't have any shape at all.
All right, so you get Sam Snead as your playing partner in the first round. Having been on the grounds of Augusta, it's very tight first tee shot up that hill. So how does the first tee shot go for you in your first Masters? And then as we take you through the round, tell me what happened.
Well, I drove it down the middle of the fairway. I hit a good drive, and I had a 6-iron to the green. And I hit a beautiful shot, but I played, the flag was in the back of the green. And if you went over the green, you had no shot to the flag because you'd have to kind of bump it on it. Because if you try to land it on the greens are so fast, the ball would roll down off the green. And I hit a beautiful 6-iron and almost hit the flagstick. But I carried it too far, and it bounced and went over the green. And I tried to play a caddy yard shot. We call them caddy yard shots, where you run it up the bank and try to stop it by the flag. And the flag was thick, was in the back of the green. You couldn't carry the ball up on the green, because it would probably run off the green. Well, I pitched this thing up the slope with a 6-iron, and it ran off in front of the green. Now, I haven't hit a bad shot yet. I had a great drive and a great second shot, but I never should have attacked the flag. I should have let the ball land on the front of the green and two-putt and get out of there. But I was playing so good that I got aggressive, and then I three-putted in big six. And that was the start of an 80. I shot 80. I lost my control and my concentration And playing with Sam, I wasn't very happy. I wanted to play so good playing with him. So I now finished with 80, and I'm sitting in my locker room, sitting down with my head between my chest and feeling sorry for myself. I got a towel over the top of my head. And then Demerit walks in, my best friend. And he looks at me and he says, have you finished? I said, yeah, I just finished about 10 minutes ago. He said, what did you shoot? I said, I shot 80. He said, what did you make all your birdies? I looked at him and I said, there's all the birdies that I had seen all day were in the trees. And he joked and laughed. He said, that's a good attitude to have when you shoot 80. Yeah. I like that little story right there. That was well said. I said, all the birdies I saw all day were in the trees. And that was my recollection of my first round at the Masters.
All right, so that's 1951?
54.
Okay.
I had just won the previous week at Azalea, North Carolina. And I had won the week before that, and Sarazen said I was the dark horse. He said, when I shot the 80, he said, well, you're a dark horse right now. You're going to be playing at midnight. So some of the lines these guys came up with. But I played well after that. So I finished in the first eight. I think better than 18 most of the time.
Yeah, that was 54 was a big year for you because even though Augusta didn't go as well as you wanted, you obviously were the leading money winner on the PGA Tour. So things did turn around. But you got to, obviously you didn't play the weekend with the shooting an 80 in the first round, but what was your second round like?
I shot 72, I think.
So
you shot even par. I think par was 72. I shot even par. So that 72, that 8 shots better.
Yes, but still.
And if I continue to shoot 8 shots better from 72, I got down to 66.
64. Yeah.
8 shots better than the last one, huh? I probably should win this
tournament. The trouble is, if you don't make the cut, you don't see the weekend. Well, you can see the weekend, but you're not on the course. You're around the course.
Right.
which is a much different feeling.
I just felt like the course was consuming me. I wasn't ready to play the golf course like I did other courses. I was in awe of the Masters and Bobby Jones and the golf course. And it was a very hilly course. And there weren't too many flat holes.
There is not. I remember the first time I went a number of years ago. It stays with you because every time you step back on those hallowed grounds and you start to walk the course, you're like, oh, I remember this. Yeah, it's how you know it's Georgia and it's a former plantation, a former fruit orchard. How can it be this hilly? But it is.
Yeah, you take nine, the second shot up that hill. Up that slope, and then you got 18, you got 17. The first hole that you drive is relatively flat as the par 5, 15. You drive it pretty flat, and then if you hit it long, you get a downslope to the for your second shot, which incidentally, history's sake, some guy hit a 3-wood to the green on a downhill lie and knocked it in the hole for 2. And went on to win the Masters. And he was my good friend, Gene Sire, who I had met when I was 16 years old. And he hit one of the greatest shots in golf. He hit a cut 3-wood with a downhill lie and knocked it in the hole for 2. I think he tied Craig Wood. I'm not sure, but... So he finished 2, 3, 4, 4, I think. And then the playoff.
That shot, I think, became known as the shot heard around the world, as the great Gene Saracen, hold out that shot. And it's still one of the greatest shots ever in the history, not just of the Masters tournament, but golf in general.
Yes. Of course, when you have a downhill lie, you got to knock a little of that water to a green that slopes toward the water. You better come up with something that's got a lot of loft and a height and land on the green with a soft bounce. Otherwise, you're going to run over the green. And then you come pitching or chipping back downhill toward the water. So you can take the panic button pretty quick.
Well, I think you said a very operative word earlier in our conversation, and that was aggressive. You got aggressive, and this is certainly a death blow for a lot of golfers that play at Augusta, whether it's in the Masters or just playing that course in general. Because if you get too aggressive, you pay the price.
Well, I hit the most beautiful 6-iron, and I thought the ball would end up back of the hole on the green, but it went over it, and then my work, it was cut out, and I didn't handle it. So, that was just a bad shot making. I should have never gone. I think I should have just hit it to the front of the green with a run toward the flag. Two putt and get out of there and go to the par 5 and make birdies.
So what do you take away from that tournament in Augusta National? What are your memories of? What is your favorite memory of that?
First thing that you take away from the Masters is you're playing in the Masters, and when people ask you if you play in the Masters, they consider that you met God. And when we told you. That lane, that first lane toward the clubhouse, the tree line lane, and then you see this white, beautiful building. You know, while you're driving there, you think, well, I might meet Moses or God or somebody, but you have that aura feeling of being special.
Special guest this hour is Bob Toski. We'll be back with more stories about Augusta and more after this break.
All right, this is Trey Cool from Green Day, and we're teeing it up with Keith Jones like we always do. It's a habit we can't stop.
We're back spending time with Bob Toski, a regular contributor, Hall of Famer, multi-Hall of Famer, and talking about Augusta National. Continuing our conversation from the last segment, Bob driving down Magnolia Lane, and that is, I mean, there's nothing about Augusta National that isn't historic, Bob. It's just, I mean, obviously the tournament's been going on for a long, long time, but there are certain things that stand out to people that have had the opportunity to play Augusta National.
Well, it's a beautiful golf course. I mean, thing about it is unique, and of course when you add Bobby Jones's name to it, and when I first met Bobby Jones, it was a thrill just to be able to play in a tournament and meet him and have him congratulate me that I had played well enough to play at his tournament, which I played three times. So I didn't play as well as I wanted to, but to play in the tournament three times and to play with the great players like Sam and Nelson and all of these great players, it's a special feeling. I don't care what you shoot. It's the golf course. It's the history of a great player like Jones. And it of course, it's very hilly. It's a hard-walking golf course, which I found being as small as I was, and then these little small legs, it wasn't easy to walk up and down the slopes of those golf courses, the fairways. But like I said before, I played with Billy Campbell, the USGA president, Campbell, and you play with special people because all special players that were invited to that tournament. You had to be a player and you had to have a record to be able to play in the tournament. So I always enjoyed it. But I didn't play as well as the one I got to be able to play three times. And play with all the big players. And the gallery, I might say, is probably the gallery that's the best in the world. When you hit a wonderful shot, all they did was clap. For anybody hollered at the Masters, like they did in New York. They were golf-minded. They respected a great golf shot, and they applauded it. And if they completely hit a poor shot, they would kind of yawn or say something, oh my God, and try to show some feeling for the bird that hit a poor shot and give them some confidence. But they were very golf minded, and you know how many people watch that tournament. I must have put 20,000 a day out there.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. It's pretty amazing. I always say, having had the honor to have been there now a number of times, that it's the, if not the greatest sporting event in the world, it's certainly one of the top ones, because the orchestration and all the moving parts are seamless, and it is all about the golf, and it is all about the respect for the golfers and the golf course. And if you do things that you shouldn't, and you know you shouldn't do them, it likely will be your last Masters. The lovely people at Augusta National do not mess around when it comes to their golf tournament, and the player, that includes the players and the way you treat the players and the way you support the players and everything about that, which makes it one of the greatest experiences ever to be around the game of golf. It shows you the true essence of what is golf is really like, and it almost takes you back to when Bob Toski was playing Augusta National in the 50s and the success there and all the great players that have come through there from the first tee all the way to the 18th green, and just the impact that that course and that tournament has had on the game of golf, and how it went from invitation where not many golfers would show up to what it is now, more than 80 years later. It is something to behold. We're with Bob Toski talking about the Masters and more, and we'll be back to start the second half hour after this break.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones, and we'll be right back. I'll keep my pants on.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
Welcome back. We are back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with our man, Bob Toski. Yeah, it's making time for Toski because we can. And, you know, we love to monopolize him. The guy's 99 years old. He'll be 100 years old or young in September. On the 18th, if you want to send him Bob a card, put it care of, tee it up, and we'll make sure we get it to him. But that aside, Bob was out playing golf just last week. So, yeah, like you know, playing golf. So you aspire to be Bob Toski. I know I do. So good job on that, Bob. But quickly back to Augusta National and the impact it's had on the game, professional game. And it's just a tournament unlike any other. And I don't say that out of any, you know, sort of, you know, trying to copy our buddy Jim Nance or anything like that. But it just is. And when you compare it to a tournament like the Phoenix Open, which is now the waste management and all that stuff that's going out there. I don't understand why the PGA Tour hasn't taken better notes, you know, to control the galleries. And the PGA of America, people resigned their position at the PGA of America because of that thing that called the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black in New York.
Yeah, well, Phoenix is a honky-tonk tournament, as I look at it. And if Bobby Jones was alive today, he would chastise the way the tournament is being run, because when he ran his tournament, it was an invitation. It had nothing to do with the PGA or the USGA or the RNA. It was Bobby Jones running his old special invitational tournament on a great golf course with a great player, and the tournament has run so well. I don't think there's many tournaments that have played as good, run as good as the Masters.
No, there's no question. I've been to major championships. I've been to regular tour events. I've been to LIV events. I've been to LPGA events, and all of them pale in comparison to what goes on in Augusta, the sleepy little town that has a great golf course and a tremendous worldwide tournament. I mean, the way that tournament is put on. I was actually talking to somebody just earlier this week, and CBS and ESPN who broadcast it don't get charged rights fees. They don't have to pay anything. They just do the production, and then the Masters organization controls the broadcast. But it's great because it's almost nonstop golf. You need some sponsorship for different reasons, but it's very limited. It's very selective, and the powers that be, you know, are very selective about who they sponsors that golf tournament. And it's evident when you watch it on television, which is not nearly as beautiful as it is in person, as you well know firsthand, too.
Yeah, I had, I was given a ride around the golf course prior to playing it the first time I played it. And It was Bobby Jones's right-hand man. I'm trying to remember his name, but he drove me in the car and showed me all the beautiful flowers and named all the flowers that they had. And it was just a great thing for me to be ridden around there for about 2 hours for him to describe every hole and how they tried to make it beautiful and playable.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And I was fortunate to be at Augusta to honor Lee Elder. And it was obviously COVID had a factor on the tournament. So it was very, very limited on who actually could get to that tournament that year. And it was just unbelievable because there weren't many of us there. And to follow certain golfers around and just take in everything without the mass of patrons that usually attend the tournament. It was just something that I will always treasure to have had that opportunity to do that. That said, I always look forward to going to Augusta and attending the Masters every year, regardless of how many people are going to that tournament. The patrons are, you know, there and they're enjoying the golf and they have to. You know, it's decorum. It's a true throwback in the world of sports, and it's amazing. It's amazing to have the opportunity to be there, and it's amazing to watch, especially on the par 3 day where the families, you know, are celebrated and everybody's out there.
Yeah, that was a great move right there. A great move.
Yeah, that's very, very special. No question.
That's very special, and that's the right word, special. Everything about Augusta and the tournament is special.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel like he's the king of the world when you get up there.
Yeah, and that's just somebody who's able to attend the tournament, not somebody who is either playing in the tournament or he's even played the course. That's, you know, that's way next level stuff there. When you have that opportunity, and there are so many professional golfers that when you ask them straight away which the tournament that they want to win, which major do you want? The Masters is usually the first thing out of their mouth because it's so special, and you get the lifetime invitation.
And the caddies were so special. Caddies, wore those white uniforms. You know, they caddied every day, and they knew the golf course and the greens. And if you wanted to get some good information on club selection or green reading, they were real good at that, and because they knew the golf course, and they would help the tour player to gain some confidence by knowing how to talk to him about what club to use, and then what shot to play into the green, and read the green about how much break there is and how fast it plays. So all that kind of information is very vital and very important to shooting a low score. But that is all gentlemen, and I'd like to use that word, gentlemen. You felt like a gentleman when you played the Masters because of the name Bobby Jones. And I'll always have great memories of Jones and the Masters.
Yeah, I miss the days when they used the club caddies. You know, they were certainly, if you went there, never played the course before, you give your first invitation, to have that local knowledge from those caddies was paramount. And when Augusta allowed the golfers to have their regular caddies instead of the club caddies, it definitely changed a lot. Now, talking with guys like Casey Kerr, one of our caddy buddies who's looped a few times around Augusta National, especially with Fuzzy, it's special for the caddies as well. So I don't take anything away from those caddies, the professional caddies, but the club caddies, I think that added a great element, and it certainly helped a number of young players decades ago when they played Augusta National for the first time in the Masters.
Yeah, well, the caddies were pretty professional too, even though they weren't caddying for tour players all the time. They were professional in the way they handled themselves to help the tour player. And I'm sure there's still a lot of them that are still caddying there.
Yeah, let me let the host correct himself, because they're all professional caddies. So the tour caddies took over for the club caddies, but they're all professionals because that's how they're making their living. So I will stand amended on that. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, esteemed guests, for just bringing that up, because to correct oneself is divine. So we're going to make sure that we stay as accurate as possible. But yes, the tour caddies that are in a bag of their golfer, now it's changed a bit. Those guys have to really know their stuff, and it's usually the first time around. So it's very difficult to win that tournament on your first go, for sure.
Oh, that's for sure. And, I never had a professional tour caddy. We couldn't afford somebody like they can today. But when I played the Masters, I just felt like these caddies were professional caddies, because they knew the course, they knew how to play the shots of the green, and how to read the green, and try to keep the player confident and be able to finish and play a decent round. And that's important from the caddy standpoint and the relationship to play.
Yeah, I used to caddy a little bit for my grandfather when I was growing up. That was the only caddying I did. But to have a caddy, which I've had at numerous golf outings, including at our buddy Dennis Satisher's beautiful Caves Valley, is a different mindset you have to get yourself into. If you're used to getting in the cart and taking your own bag and picking your own club and raking your own bunkers and things like that, it's definitely I'm saying acquired taste. I like it, but it takes a little getting used to when you're not used to it.
It's a unique tournament in itself, and when you drive to Magnolia Lane toward that clubhouse, before you even play or practice a golf shot, you are very, very special.
So you mentioned you played it three times. So what years did you play in the Masters?
54, 5, and 6.
Gotcha. 4, 5, and 6. Yeah, gotcha on that. Because your buddy Jimmy Demerit obviously won it three times and before those years. But that certainly was.
They said that Demerit would never have won the tournament because he didn't hit it long enough. And of course, they've added length to the golf course since I played it, like number 11. They moved the tee back 100 yards, I think. It went through that little room with all those pines, and they made that hole a hell of a par 4 hole. And there are a number of other holes that they've added the length to, and I thought it was long enough when I played it.
Well, technology's changed a little bit, Bob. I have to harken back to the 50s. Were you playing Persimmon Woods at that time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But were you playing Balata balls, or were you playing something else?
Yeah, playing Balata.
So there you go. So fast forward a lot of years, and now we're dealing with titanium and filled balls and spun balls and all kinds of.
But if I can add something to what you Keith, just remember, I don't care what kind of a golf club you got in your hand. It could be the from technology, the best club in the world for distance and direction. But when the player holds that club in his hand, that club is at the mercy of these guys' hands and arms, which shape the swing and create the big arc. And that club has no idea where it's going. It's got to be controlled by the player. And the speed of the club and the direction of the club have to be under excellent control. 1/64th of an inch deviation of the club head at the point of impact can move the ball offline further than you can imagine, depending on the speed in which the club head travels at to and past the point of impact. So you can see how precise the hand-eye coordination has to be to control the face of that club and have that ball go where they want it to go. So, yes, they talk about technology, but to me, what's happened more in the game, Keith, as far as playing the game of golf, these players today are 6 foot tall, average, 200 pounds, average, club head speed, launch angle. They can carry the ball to almost 300 yards. And that shortens the golf course up. But, of course, the more speed you have and the longer the ball stays in the air, the more you have what I call you need your zip code because you can't find where you're going. And when they say, yes, the technology, but just remember, if technology was the answer to golf, then why, in all these years that I've watched golf, and I used to build golf clubs too, you know, I had a custom-made company, but if you put the best golf club made in a player's hands that was unathletic and didn't have athleticism and he couldn't find the ball very well, the club can't do him any good because he has poor hand-eye coordination. And if you have poor hand-eye coordination or eye-hand coordination, whichever you want to call it, you're not going to be a good player. And I'll share something with you that comes to my mind right now, Keith. I'm 99 years old. I went out and played golf, 9 holes. And I want to tell you something. I stood over that golf ball after what I had gone through with that leg injury and being in a hospital and taking about 20 needles in my body. I stood over that ball, and I swear to God, I was afraid I was going to miss it. And I was afraid if I made contact, it wouldn't be very good.
We're going to find out what happened to that golf ball. We come back with the great one. Bob Toski's with us this hour. And to our final break, back to wrap up the show with Toski. Called Setting the Table, Setting the Scene, and we've done that now with Bob Toski. He is 99 years old. He was playing golf recently. He mentioned he had a leg injury, took a lot of needles in the leg. He has come back pretty strong from that, and he's out playing 9 holes of golf recently. Okay, 9 holes, 99 and 9 holes. So it kind of work stays. There's a theme somewhere in there, Bob, but you're standing over this ball, and continue your story.
Well, I didn't have the hand-eye coordination that I had before. And a lot of it was due to the fact that your nerves and your psyche play a part in which you control the golf club. And you don't want your conscious and your subconscious mind to get involved to a point where there's a dilemma. You've got to play the last 2 or 3 seconds of that golf club has to travel from your feet to about the head of the club, about 7 or 8 feet in the air, even higher. And you've got to bring the club back from that height to that low to find the ball where the club face square. Now, that takes some talent, believe me. And I've lost that talent. If I don't have the strength, I don't have the feeling of control. And I hit a few good shots when I play, but I hit more poor shots. And I didn't miss the ball, but I didn't feel like I could make good contact and keep control of the club face. So now I can appreciate, when I talk for 28, how a handicap player feels when he stands over it. They're hoping, and they're not coping.
It's like a full circle moment right here for Bob Toski, the leading money winner on the PGA Tour, to now one of us recreational golfers that struggles with the game. But the fact that Bob is 99 and on a golf course and hitting golf balls, I don't care what your name is, that's daggone impressive.
Just to be able to get up and swing the club and try to get some length in your backswing. Your body muscles don't want to turn, or you don't have the flexibility and the strength. So you're compensating. You're then making your swing more compact and shorter, and that changes your tempo. When you start getting too short and too quick, it's pretty hard to find the golf ball that way. I remember how long and fluid my golf swing was. Oh, man. I mean, it was like it was coming out of heaven. And the feeling was I would never feel like I did now over the golf ball. I never had that feeling. I always had a lot of confidence in being able to play the shot I wanted to. And of course, time is taking its toll. But you know what? All the people that I played with were in awe of the fact that I walked 9 holes, tested the strength of my leg, and played. And we shot 500, which wasn't bad for amateurs and a pro that looked like an amateur.
So there were witnesses to this. I just heard there were witnesses to this 9 holes of golf.
Oh, yeah. They were there.
Some lucky people, let me tell you.
Well, they enjoyed playing with me, and I made a couple of putts to help the score. And it's a learning period that I never expected to see or feel. I have so much more respect now for all the players that I thought that were high handicappers and trying to find a golf ball. And I was trying to find a way to teach them to make a golf swing that would control the golf club a little better. But Keith, it's 99. I'm happy. I'm standing above the ground instead of below it.
I couldn't have said it better. And it was a teaching moment. There we go. The great Bob Toski, one of the greatest teachers ever. My guest on TW Keith Jones. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Bob needs to. and you need to too. Practice, practice, take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.